WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. My guest, Joy Shuck, had a rewarding career working as a counselor with single parents and troubled youth when in 1985 her husband decided to run for governor of Colorado. Shuck was expected to give up her career and become a political wife. That meant spending 18 hours a day on the campaign trail, making speeches and attending events on behalf of her husband. Toward the end of the campaign, she found herself feeling exhausted and depressed. She wrote in her journal, "I can almost feel my personal identity slipping away." After her husband's defeat in the primary, Joy Shuck began talking to other political wives, including Barbara Bush and Marilyn Quayle. She's now written a book called Political Wives, Veiled Lives. When her husband first told her in 1985 that he wanted to run for governor, Joy Shuck didn't really understand what she was getting herself into.
Well, I really just imagined that it would not be very different than what I was already doing, which was pretty much leading a very independent life. And I thought I would be making speeches, which, you know, at first is rather frightening. But once you do a few, you get really comfortable with it and enjoyed it very much. But I just imagined that it would be not too different a lifestyle than we already had, and I was very surprised. I was very wrong.
You were given a booklet, I believe it was called The Candidate's Wife, and this was a set of instructions, I guess, about the etiquette of campaigning.
Yes.
Can you instruct us in what that book instructed you?
Well, I found it, among other things, I really thought it was something that was more like a parody. I just could not believe that this was what was supposed to be reality for the political wife, and that was that you were to really and truly and totally subordinate yourself. In fact, when I started reading it, you know, it would say, well, if you don't have an answer to this or that question, it's perfectly all right and advisable for you to just sit back and tell everybody that you'd have to go home and discuss it with your husband. And, you know, I mean, things like that, I just really had a problem with that. It could, because it only reminded me of Pat Nixon, you know, the quintessential political wife, you know, who in fact in 1975 said, "I have sacrificed everything in my life I considered precious in order to advance the political career of my husband." And so I didn't see myself in that role. And so when I was reading this little handbook on how to be supportive and smile at your husband's workers, and I mean, it was just demeaning.
Who wrote this handbook?
I don't know. There was no author, but it was put out by the Republican National Committee, and I don't know what year. But it seemed to me it was very, very old.
You write about what the quote-unquote system demands of a political wife, I guess the system as you read in this particular book. When you talk about the system, who's the architect of that? Who is perpetuating this?
Well, you know, that's a good question. It's a complicated question. The system, for me, is everything that comprises politics. It is expected of you, whether it is by the campaign staff, whether it is by a media consultant, whether it is by a just people in the political realm who decide what the role should be. And the first thing, of course, as this manual also indicated, was image. And that is, you know, to me, not where we should be going. We need more authenticity in politics.
What problem do they have with a strong-willed, opinionated wife?
Well, and the one thing that I learned was that a strong, opinionated wife is supposed to shout with confidence her strength of character, her opinions, her statements, but with her mouth closed. So you're really discounted as a person. Barbara Bush said, when George is no longer in public office. We can go to parties and we can fight and we can have a good time, but right now we're a united front. And that's what is expected for the wife to be in total agreement with her husband. One political wife, who I know very well and interviewed, said to me, "You have to be so careful what you say because tomorrow you may find your words in the newspaper," and I have. And she said she knew of another particular person with whom I also interviewed. And this woman said to me, when she was new to politics, she went to a party, she talked with a reporter, she was having a very nice conversation. She really didn't understand at the time that what you say is on the record unless you indicate that this is off the record. And so the reporter asked the woman how she felt about her husband's position on such and such, and she disagreed with him. And so she told her, and she told her what her position was. Unfortunately, the next day, the headline said, "Political couple bickering." And that, of course, is why so many political wives are very closed. They're very cautious. They don't want their words to come back and bite them or destroy their husband's career because they believe differently than he does. And it's unfortunate.
I'm speaking today with Joy Shuck, and she's the author of a book called Political Wives, Veiled Lives. Why do people agree to this grueling 18-hour schedule of dinners and handshakes and meeting people in front of factories and giving speeches? Why agree to that?
Well, I agree with you. I don't think that one has to do that. I think you have to set limits. You have to take responsibility. A woman really has to take responsibility for herself. There's maybe a way of explaining, how, and this may make it a little easier to understand. I believe a lot of the problem with women who are political spouses stems from a generational issue. We have the women of the pre-50s, let's say, and then Barbara Bush fits in that area. And so these women were raised in traditional households, raised to be a wife and mother, to stay home. And even when the children are grown and gone, she is also expected to stay at home. Now, of course, she does volunteer work or whatever her causes or interests are. That's not to say she doesn't do those, but she really is more of a homebody. The women of the 50s really are the ones, I believe, who have the most difficult time because these women also were raised in traditional households, but they then have the influence of the women's movement, which many of these women have, you know, a lot of the ideas of the women's movement have been embraced by these women. And so I refer to them more like the swing generation. You know, they swing back and forth. Now we get to the women of the post-60s. Now, these are the women who do have a career, who fit the modern woman image that the public's expectations pretty much describe. And these are the women who can impact the system because they don't necessarily comply with all these rules. And they are the ones who are setting good limits for themselves. They will go here, they won't go there. They say things like, "It was his victory. I was a major part of it, but it was his victory." So there's really a difference when you look at the generations.
Let's take a short break and then we'll talk some more. My guest is Joy Shuck, and her new book, Political Wives, Veiled Lives, examines the travails the wife of a political candidate faces when her husband runs for office. It's an experience that Shuck knows firsthand. In 1986, her husband lost his bid to be elected governor of Colorado. We'll talk more after a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Joy Shuck, and her book is called Political Wives, Veiled Lives. How much damage do you think a political wife can do to her husband's campaign? I'm thinking, for instance, of Kitty Dukakis, who almost before the press could get a hold of the story, went public and told everyone about her addiction problems. I don't think that was seen as necessarily hurtful to her husband's campaign. But do you see instances where a woman really can do political damage?
Well, I've been told by several political wives that you have to be very careful what you say because you can damage his chances. You can damage his image, and in turn, it damages your image. But Betty Ford was interesting because she was the kind of woman who had internalized a lot of the image portion of politics. She had subordinated herself, although she was very candid and open about a lot of issues. And she said, I went along for a long time thinking everything was okay. I was married to the perfect husband. I had four perfect children. I lived in this wonderful home. And I didn't understand what the therapists were talking about when they suggested that I had problems. You see, and so much of what the expectations are, if a woman buys into them and tries to live that way so that she won't say what will in any way, shape, or form harm her husband's chances, she's going to have consequences.
Do you see these women then as real casualties of the political process?
Oh, yes, definitely, definitely. It's very sad. It really is. It isn't the way it has to be, I don't believe.
You describe the trials and tribulations of being a campaign wife, but there are many perks, I would think. I mean, there's just plain attention. There's the spotlight. There's the applause. Did you enjoy that?
Well, as I say, you can get caught up in it. But given my druthers would not be to be in the limelight. I also would prefer that politics was not, and politicians were not given star status. You know, to me, I grew up thinking that politicians ran for office because they wanted to serve their country, not because they were celebrities. And so I have a different view of what I would like to see politics, you know, the direction I would like to see politics go.
Did your husband sense the strain you were under? The way you wrote, you hardly saw each other, so I can't imagine it would be hard for him to see how you were struggling with his campaign.
Oh, yes. We talked about it a lot. We really did. And I think one of my journal entries, I'm not sure, you know, just where I included it, but I know that we had discussed often that I was feeling as if my identity was starting to erode and I was having problems and I was not really going to graciously relinquish parts of myself. And I can remember him saying to me one time, well, my gosh, I thought we had this wonderful marriage going now because we're working as a team.
Well, that gets back to what you said about the kind of pressure to be perfect, I guess, to present
yes.
this united front, to look like this family that would have walked off the pages of the Saturday Evening Post.
Yeah, how ludicrous. I mean, you know, when you think about Elizabeth Taylor, somebody who was so independent and free-spirited and intelligent, and even she tried to be and live by a prescribed role. She, one story, whether it's an exaggeration or not, really does illustrate this prescribed role. When John Warner was running for Senate from Virginia in 1976 for the 78 election, he decided to portray the Virginia farmer. And he was married to Elizabeth Taylor at the time, and he explained to her, you're going to have to kiss a lot of babies, and you're going to shake a lot of hands, and you're going to go to picnics and barbecues and fairgrounds and give speeches and be at my side. However, I would like you to do this and portray yourself as the farmer's wife.
The role of a lifetime, right?
Right, right. The Oscar winning. Another Oscar. But even she, you know, had such a difficult time The marriage disintegrated. They spent less and less time together. She was shuffled aside, so to speak.
I'm wondering, if you felt this way about campaigning, how would you have felt if your husband had actually won?
Yes.
I mean, are you almost relieved that he didn't?
Well, you know, you go through all kinds of emotions after a losing campaign. And one of the emotions is relief. You know, we now can go back to being private people. We don't have to see our lives chronicled in the newspapers. We don't have to be perfect and all the rest of the stuff. But it is a loss. And whether you liked it or not, there's a grieving period. And there's just that a lot of that open space, that sadness that you have to deal with. And a lot of the after effects of a campaign are placed on the wife because he can go back to work the next day. He can go back to his career, whatever that is. And she pretty much helps with tearing down, you know, the whole state, all the headquarters. And she has a more chance to grieve the situation than he does. So loss really is harder for the wife, I think.
Are you talking about yourself?
Yes. Yes. It was hard. You know, not that I loved campaigning all the time, not that I would choose it, but yes, it's a grieving period. Yeah, hard.
If you could do it all over again and turn back the clock and make it 5 years ago, how would you do it differently?
Well, I certainly would not stop working. I would continue doing what I was doing, and I would negotiate much more clearly now. I know more who I am and what my needs are and what is comfortable for me and what isn't. And so I would pick and choose, and I would go to the things that I wanted to go to first and foremost. And I would go to some that my husband felt was critical for me to be there with him because he wanted me there. And then we'd see how it went. But it would be a much different campaign as far as my participation.
Well, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Marty.
Joy Shuck's book about her experiences on the campaign trail is called Political Wives, Veiled Lives. Her husband ran unsuccessfully for governor of Colorado in the mid-1980s.